Shabbat shalom. Generally speaking, Jewish sources are a decidedly mixed bag when it comes to the question of free speech. You don't need to look further than this morning's Torah readings recommended punishment for the sin of false prophecy, death by strangulation, to realize that the First Amendment would sit uneasily in the context of Deuteronomic law. Just last month, we read of the fate of Korach and his companions who were swallowed up by the earth for the sin of speaking out against Moses. So much, I guess, for the right to assemble. Be it the punishment of the stubborn and rebellious child, the biblical prohibitions against idolatry, or the afflictions awaiting the would-be talebearer, we should think twice about using the Torah as our go-to text in defense of freedom of speech. So this morning, when I speak to you about the importance of free speech, I do not do so much because its value I can derive from Jewish texts, so we'll return to that question soon enough, but rather because it's a value whose presence I believe is vital to the health not just of the American Jewish community, but the much wider community in which we, our children, and grandchildren inhabit. These past few weeks, I've been following with great interest the reverberations of a letter written by the dean of my alma mater at the University of Chicago. The dean of students, John J. Ellison, wrote a letter to the incoming class of 2020, setting expectations in regards to campus discourse. Let me read to you a few selections to give you the flavor of his welcome message. One of the University of Chicago's defining characteristics is our commitment to freedom of expression. Members of our community are encouraged to speak, write, listen, challenge, and learn without fear of censorship. Civility and mutual respect are vital to all of us, and freedom of expression does not mean the freedom to harass or threaten others. You will find that we expect members of our community to be engaged in rigorous debate, discussion, and even disagreement. At times, this may challenge you and even cause you discomfort. The letter goes on to say, our commitment to academic freedom means that we do not support so-called trigger warnings. We do not cancel invited speakers because their topics might prove controversial. And we do not condone the creation of intellectual safe spaces where individuals can retreat from ideas and perspectives at odds with their own. Now, when I was at the University of Chicago, my greatest struggle involved memorizing Akkadian verb tables. I have no recollection of raucous campus debates, and I can't recall ever receiving a letter like this one. Times, it would seem, have changed. Indelicate as the wording of the letter may be, it's been understood to be a courageous, preemptive move by the University of Chicago in the context of a culture war taking place on college campuses nationwide. Last year, a Yale administrator was rebuked for suggesting that students just relax when it comes to how others dress up for Halloween, no matter how offensive the costumes may be. At Wesleyan, there was a concerted effort to defund the student paper for the sin of running an anti-Black Lives Matter article. Campus after campus, student populations so hypersensitive to being slighted, so coddled against any actual or perceived offense, that discourse has been stifled in the very place whose intended mission is the free exchange of ideas. Rather than being a brave space for rigorous argument, these universities, often chastened by the political left, seek to create safe space where nobody's feathers can be ruffled and where teachers must forewarn students whenever a subject is raised that may rattle someone. Not everyone, to be sure, has responded positively, and the letter is far from perfect. We'll be discussing it with our teens this afternoon at my home. But since it was sent, a growing list of schools, including Columbia, Brown, Claremont McKenna, have issued similarly minded statements. The University of Chicago may be, and I can attest to this, the place where fun goes to die. But It is apparently a place where free speech is very, very much alive. You may be able to tell by way of my tone or school loyalties that I'm largely in agreement with the letter. But before we affix copies of the First Amendment into our prayer books, we would do well to pause two beats to think about the implications of such a letter for our Jewish students on campus. After all, it's the pro-Israel and Jewish community, perhaps more than any other, that's presently most sensitive and perceived to be most vulnerable to the excesses of free speech. In a world of anti-Zionists and Holocaust deniers, in the present climate of BDS and delegitimization of Israel, is the Jewish community really prepared to stand at the front line in defense of free speech on campus? When I was in my hometown of Los Angeles last weekend, news broke of the decision of the president of the UCLA Graduate Student Association, a Hindu, by the way, to transfer schools allegedly due to his being harassed by those who were upset by his actions to oppose funding for groups that support BDS. Alternatively, in the alternate reality of UC Berkeley, students can receive academic credit this fall for a class titled Palestine, a Settler Colonial Analysis that essentially explores avenues to destroy the State of Israel. West Coast and East Coast, public and private colleges, the concern is one and the same. Our children and grandchildren living in environments hostile to the very values we hold dear. It is the Jewish community, goes the counter-argument, who should be most concerned by the pernicious effects of free speech run amok. It's a complicated debate, and I want to speak with some caution, because as I've shared before, my legal education never went beyond taking the LSAT. Nevertheless, as a rabbi, an educator, and most of all, a parent of soon-to-be college kids, I do believe that the Jewish community does itself a great disservice by coming down hard against free speech. Yes, campus administrators have an obligation to their students to provide a safe environment and to take proactive steps if students are being harassed to the point that substantially interferes with their education. Yes, it is the responsibilities of universities to create an environment where words can be both spoken and heard without fear of harm. That is also the promise of free speech. That said, I cannot help but think we're doing a great disservice to our children by not letting them be exposed to all sorts of ideas, even those we find totally objectionable. Last year, a well-to-do congregant whose child attends a certain college called me, complaining about the BDS activities taking place on his child's campus. Rabbi, he asked, what would it cost for me to send Alan Dershowitz there? You know the campus, you've met Dershowitz. Let me know and I'll write the check and make it happen. My response to him after noting his name for the Capitol campaign was that well-meaning and generous as he was, I was pretty sure that having Dershowitz shout at or be shouted down on that campus was probably not the best tactic to help his daughter. Why not, I suggested, call the Hillel director, direct your resources there so your daughter can be educated with a love of Israel, the facts of the Middle East, and the confidence and tools to articulate her views on her own. And though I didn't say it to him, I did think to myself that his offer to helicopter in was a dime coming a little too little, a little too late. It represented a compensatory act for his knowledge that his child was ill-prepared to weather the harsher elements of campus discourse. You see, the front line of BDS is not in the campus classroom. It's in your home. It's at your Shabbat table. It's in the synagogue. It's in the decisions you make to raise your children who are loving and knowledgeable and passionate Zionists. Long before your children arrive on campus, they need to know Israel and love Israel in her strengths and her weaknesses to the point that your children are poised and prepared for whatever comes their way. They need to understand where the line is between anti-Israel speech and activity and anti-Semitism, and be prepared to respond appropriately. When it comes to Jewish students on campus, we will win the war not because we sought to shut down the debate or because we brought in a bigger gun than they did. We will win because our ideas are better than theirs, and our children and grandchildren are armed with the tools to advocate on behalf of the ideals that they and we believe in. Even with the best of intentions, we dare not be contributories to what our upcoming scholar in residence and Shabbat in the pew member, Dr. Julian Zelizer, calls the closing of the American Jewish mind. If we want our children to be resilient, self-confident, and adroit defenders of the Jewish state, then we must realize that those are qualities that can be obtained only by way of a wholehearted embrace of the principles of free speech. No matter what our Torah reading may say on the subject of free speech, while God may have had the first word, it is we human beings who have the last. From Abraham's first argument with God at Sodom and Gomorrah through a multi-millennial tradition of Talmudic debate, ours is a tradition that prizes what Justice William Brennan had in mind when he wrote that the First Amendment protects robust, uninhibited, and wide-open speech. Our heroes have always been those prophetic figures willing to engage in the ideas of the hour, speak out against an oppressor, against each other, and sometimes even against God. As Heinrich Heine once wrote, "Since the Exodus, freedom has always been spoken with a Hebrew accent, and our day should be no different." Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol sha'arecha, judges and officials you shall appoint for yourselves in all your gates. It was the 18th century mystic Rabbi Isaiah Horowitz who interpreted this verse to refer not to city gates, but to the gates of our souls, our ears, our mouths, and otherwise. The gatekeepers to our words must not be imposed from the outside. They must be only self-regulated. You shall appoint for yourselves. It's a divinely given gift of free speech that marks us as humans. It's a gift we must ever develop, sharpen, and use wisely and often. Most of all, it is a gift we must pass down to the coming generation so that our children can find their own voice in the cacophonous symphony of a diverse humanity. Shabbat Shalom.